Someone You Should Know. A program about people you know, and even more that you don't. Hosted by Stuart Sachs, veteran, husband, father, and grandfather. Now, here's your host, Stuart Sachs.
Well, good day to you, and welcome to another edition of Someone You Should Know. Very glad to have you with us today. We're going to have a good show, a very informative show. Maybe a little humor thrown in there too. And we are brought to you today by our good friends over at No Sweat Heating and Air Conditioning. You know, right now we are in the middle of summer. It is hot. And I have always said the last thing you need is to turn that air conditioner on and nothing happens. So you need to have people like No Sweat experts on your side, because just in case something happens, believe me, they will be there today. Not a week from Thursday, they'll be there today. If you're in the North Dallas area and you need any help with your heating and air conditioning systems, No Sweat experts are the people to call. And it's interesting that they are sponsoring the show today, because we're going to be talking a little bit about climate change. And it's very, very possible that these excessive heats that we're going through day after day after day in North Texas has something to do with climate control. And so my guest can probably shed some light and maybe a little air conditioning into the subject of climate change, because Ethan Brown is my guest today. And Ethan, welcome to Someone You Should Know.
Thanks for having me, Stuart. Great to be here.
I am so thrilled, because there's a lot of confusion, I think, about climate change. And you probably talk about it very often. There's some people that it is a high item on their priority list, and there's others that say, climate change, what does that matter? And it's down at the bottom of their priority list. So I'm going to throw that thought out at you right at the beginning. How concerned should each and every one of us be with climate change?
Well, climate change is a very serious issue. You mentioned the extreme heat in Texas right now. We see that. We see wildfires. We see hurricanes. We see all these different things getting worse, and climate change plays a major role in that. Obviously, there are some people who have this alarmist rhetoric that might be a little too far, others who are either skeptical or just not all that engaged, who might not be as concerned as we should be. But there's also a lot of solutions to climate change, and that's where a lot of my work lives, is bringing people in and figuring out how do we actually address these issues. I think that ultimately puts us in a better headspace than just being overwhelmed by the problem.
I mean, is it fair to say that a lot of people just figure, well, that's something for the scientists and the politicians to deal with? It doesn't affect me personally.
Well, it certainly is something that people, scientists are the best at figuring out what's going on. Politicians have a lot of power to address the issues, so I understand that. At the same time, I would say, climate change does affect all of us, whether we're the ones experiencing some of these extreme weather events, whether it's our tax dollars cleaning up after some of these weather events, it always comes back to us. And also, the more of us that get involved, the better the solutions will be. If we're all putting our heads together, all having our voices heard, then we can get the best possible outcomes.
And also, is the younger generations blaming the climate issues on us old people, or is it the old people that are saying, "Oh, it's the younger people's fault that we're in this"? Where does the blame fall? Is it Mother Nature?
I don't love the generational blame pointing. I think that certainly we can look back and see where our carbon emissions have come from. Carbon emissions are the driving factor of human-caused climate change, and that does come from humans. But it's just not that constructive of a conversation to do all this blame and finger-pointing. I think what's more important is to understand where we are, understand how we got there, but then work together to figure out how to address these issues. A lot of young people are concerned because For us, this is something that we're going to have to deal with our entire lives. But at the same time, I know older generations are more susceptible to things like heat stroke, or they might be more vulnerable in the event of a natural disaster. So I think it's important to everybody, and I think we should be putting our heads together and working together on this.
Do you find in your daily routines and your research and everything that the younger people, the Gen Zers and all are really stepping up, and they are maybe the generation to deal with, to get, you know, to kind of light the fire under the older generations to say, this is a really major concern and we're going to fight for it?
Gen Z is certainly trying to speak up. I did an episode recently about a court case in Montana called Held v. Montana, where a group of youth plaintiffs aged 5 to 22 were basically taking the state to court over a permitting law that they deemed unconstitutional. The Montana state constitution is one of a few states that actually guarantees a right to a clean and healthful environment for present and future generations. They passed a law that...
The only state that has that?
There's about a half dozen or so. And so the Montana passed a law that basically prevented analysis of climate impact in state permitting decisions, and these young people were arguing that that was violating that part of the Constitution. So that was a big story where youth, even people who aren't even able to vote yet, were trying to make their voices heard through the judicial system. But at the same time, I know some of them, they were certainly expressing a lot of anxiety about climate change on the stand. And to reporters, they were kind of talking about just how they felt this burden being put on them because no one else was doing anything. And that struck a chord with me as someone who initially got into climate because I was so overwhelmed by it. So I think Gen Z does want to have our voices heard, and we do want to get involved. But I hope that this can be an effort that everybody engages in and not just our generation.
Did I hear you say that some of the people that were fighting for this in Montana were as young as 5 years old?
Yeah, it was 5 to 22 was the range. There were 16 plaintiffs.
You know, you go, kids. You know, honestly, because, you know, I will say that I am very proud of that generation for doing that, because we adults sometimes become too complacent because we're too worried about health issues, and we're too worried about, you know, financial issues and all of that to really put any effort or thought into the climate. So if the kids are studying it in school and the kids are passionate about it and they're you know, rallying for it, I think that there will be steps going forward. So let's talk a little bit about Ethan Brown. You said that when you were young, you didn't really know that much about it. And then was it through school that you started to kind of, you know, fan the fire a little bit and get going into it?
I think I learned about it initially how a lot of people do, seeing all these doom and gloom headlines online, and I was just getting freaked out. This was maybe getting into high school, and I found it really overwhelming, but I didn't find it interesting. It wasn't something I wanted to learn about. It was more like, oh my gosh, this is super scary, but it seems important. And I was going to be going to Boston University to study film and television. I felt like as a storyteller, I needed a story to tell, and climate change seemed so important. So I kind of sucked it up and decided to take an environmental elective my first semester. And that was where I realized that there is so much more to this than just these doom and gloom headlines. There are a lot of nuances to these issues. There's a lot of critical thinking involved. These issues aren't just environmental. They also affect the economy and health and justice. And importantly, there are solutions to all these issues and a wide variety of solutions to these issues. So learning all that really inspired me to try to write about climate in a way that would bring in more people from different political perspectives and different backgrounds. At the same time, I ran BU's satire publication, The Bunyan, for 2 years. I took it over when it was almost dead and it was just myself left. I grew it to a 90-person team, and that was an amazing experience and taught me a lot, not just about leadership, but also how to make overwhelming topics entertaining. So being able to combine that comedy experience with my experience learning about climate and ultimately doing a dual degree in environmental analysis and policy, that was where the Sweaty Penguin was born.
Yeah, well, you know, you just let the next question right out of the bag there, because you the website is thesweatypenguin.com. It'll flash across the screen a few times during the broadcast, and folks, I urge you to mark that site, because you may want to go back and avail yourself of a lot of the information that's on the website. It's also your connection to Ethan Brown, so if you have questions, you can reach out to him. Maybe how do I get you know, a program going in my community to make people more aware of what climate change is all about. But you did start what you called the Sweaty Penguin. And of course, the first question that my listeners and viewers probably want to know is, where did you come up with the name the Sweaty Penguin?
So my dad was actually the one who initially thought of the name. I, for a while, wanted to combine comedy and climate somehow, and that idea came to him, and he always says that I'm welcome to use the name for whatever I need. Just be sure to credit him whenever someone asks that question. So there you go.
Good. And also, thanks for sending me to Boston University, Dad.
Yeah, that too.
Well, you know, and the more I thought about it, you're right. It has a bit of the humor to it. But if you really analyze that name, you know, the Sweaty Penguin has kind of a few different meanings. When you're talking about climate change and about how our glaciers are little by little disappearing, it is putting the wildlife that's in our perhaps any possible extinction. So the Sweaty Penguin, you kind of get an image of this poor thing that is used to, you know, sub-zero temperatures, and now those temperatures little by little are starting to climb. Now, when did you start the Sweaty Penguin? And that became a regular podcast that you developed.
Yeah, the original iteration of Sweaty Penguin was just a satire blog that I ran the summer before college, and it didn't really work. It was a good learning experience for me, but I was writing satire on environmental news, and people weren't following that news, so they didn't get the jokes. So that wasn't right. But when I brought it back to life with the podcast was in early quarantine. It was kind of the first time I had some free time on my hands. So I gathered up a few friends and we launched the podcast. We thought it would just be like a quarantine hobby. We'd do 10 episodes or so and have some fun. But once we got into it, we realized we were really creating something special. And so after we got about 10 or so in, we decided to expand our team a little bit, make it a weekly podcast, and 3 years later we're chugging along over 200 episodes, and it's been an amazing experience.
And am I correct that you are connected through PBS with your podcast too? How did they find you, or did you go to them?
So I had interned with PBS's multi-platform initiatives. They have at the time, they just had two. One was called Chasing the Dream, which is on poverty and opportunity in America. The other, Peril and Promise, is on climate change. They've added a few more since then, but I interned with that department. And what they do is they do a lot of licensing deals where they'll bring in outside content creators, license their content, distribute it, and that content creator gets PBS on their show. So when we kind of realized we wanted to do this thing for real, it was maybe a year or so in that I reached out to my colleagues from my internship, and I was like, hey, we've been creating this show. I know you guys have been a little starved for content during quarantine. We would really like some funding so that we can continue to do this. So we were really on the same page. We struck up a licensing deal, and that's been going for a bit over 2 years now.
That's, you know, a lot of people have said that, man, that the pandemic just really shut the door on virtually everything. And it seems to me that this really kind of opened the door for you, because now people were starting to stay at home. They were working from home. They were spending a little bit more time watching TV content and a lot of YouTube content and everything. And so that kind of maybe opened an opportunity for more people to learn more about things like climate change.
I think the big opportunity was, A, myself getting some more time. I don't think this could have happened if it weren't for quarantine, just because it has been a very time-consuming endeavor. And right. Also being able to bring in friends who were bored out of their mind. I was able to put together a dream team of people I had worked with in the past because everyone was so bored. And so that made the Sweaty Penguin possible in the early stages. I think everything from there, I don't know if COVID helped or hurt. I think we kind of have to kick in every door that we get through, but certainly it's there were a lot of unfortunate things about COVID, but that was one bright spot that we could launch this program.
You know, I grew up watching National Geographic a lot, and very often there were discussions about things that we didn't necessarily label as climate issues and all, but they were. And that seems to have evolved for anybody who has followed National Geographic. They are now following a lot more that's being said about what climate change is doing to wildlife and to the world. And, you know, I guess one thing we should remind everybody that's watching and listening is that this is not a local or a regional or even a national issue. This is a global issue. I don't think, you know, unless I'm wrong, is there any part of this globe that just doesn't really have to be concerned about climate change?
No, it affects everybody, and certainly it affects some regions more than others. The Arctic is the fastest warming region of the world. There are areas like the Middle East that see more warming than others. Certainly the Southern Hemisphere is getting hit a little harder. And it often ends up being countries that are the ones who contributed the least to climate change that are getting hit the hardest, which starts to create a global justice issue. But certainly everyone is hit by climate change in some way. And so that means it's a concern for everyone. And that also means we're all in it together.
Yeah, and there is it safe to say that there is no real single issue that makes climate change what it is? It could have been, you know, in decades ago, perhaps the coal mines, the emissions that were coming from coal mines added to the climate issues. More currently, the wildfires up in Canada have caused an ash flow and all that's come south across the border in the northern part of the United States and all has been affected a little bit by that. And I've heard it say that that's part of climate change also. You know, hurricanes, tornadoes, monsoons, everything, all is affected by climate change. Do you find that given from month to month to month, that it continues to change on a regular basis?
There's always new news. I think the causes of climate change are really around how we are putting more greenhouse gases, such as carbon dioxide and methane and nitrous oxide, into the atmosphere than would naturally occur. That's primarily due to fossil fuel combustion. There's other factors too, from agriculture and cement manufacturing and that sort of, but it's largely fossil fuel combustion. The effects are so wide ranging. There are weather events becoming a lot more extreme. There are sea levels rising. We can go down a very long list, and that's kind of what we do with the Sweaty Penguin, is we take all these things one by one. I think that looking at it at that broad view can be a little bit overwhelming, but for us, when we kind of take it one by one, look at what's going on and what the solutions are. It gives us a lot of hope for the future.
I'm going to kind of put you on the fence for a little bit, Ethan, because I know that this is something that hits the halls of Congress here in the United States. I mean, we got just two different sides. There's a right side and a left side, and nobody wants to meet in the middle to talk about much of anything. And how is this hurting our efforts to move climate change forward when the right doesn't agree with the left and vice versa?
To me, a big part of the issue that I think maybe goes more to the public than to Congress, but I think there's a lot of people who feel very anxious and doomed about climate change. There's a lot of people who are in some level of denial, and there's a lot of people who are just kind of indifferent about it. And to me, all three of these groups are coming from a very similar emotional place of just fear and anxiety and maybe guilt. And these are just different reactions to a similar emotion. So at the Sweaty Penguin, the way we communicate content, we really try to target that core emotion. And that has led to us developing a very bipartisan audience where I hear from people on both sides of the aisle who love our content. I go on to shows with hosts on both sides of the aisle who really appreciate our conversations and tend to agree. So that's our approach to it. In terms of Congress, I think there's just a lot of politics that goes even beyond climate itself, but there is opportunity for common ground even through that. There have been bipartisan bills that had climate aspects in recent years, the infrastructure bill, the BEST Act, the Use It Act, the Nuclear Energy Leadership Act, the Great American Outdoors Act, all bipartisan pieces of legislation that incorporated climate. Right now, the big issue in Congress is permitting reform. Some was passed in the Fiscal Responsibility Act in June. Again, that was a bipartisan issue that had a big climate impact. And I think that will continue to be explored this summer. So sometimes we do see a lot of partisan bickering around this, but there are opportunities to find common ground. It's certainly not done enough, but there's space to do it. And I hope that it gets done more.
Well, visit thesweatypenguin.com because you can get more information about exactly what we're talking about and reach out and spend a little time learning more about it. And I think it's fair to say that we also need to urge the public to make sure that this is a subject that's being discussed in our schools, to get the Gen Zers and all who aren't involved, get them a little bit fired up about it too, because it's their world that we're leaving this mess to, and they've got to try and help something or motivate our politicians and the powers to be to do something about it. I recently, a friend told me that they were interested in going on a cruise, and the travel agent said to them, "Oh, you might want to consider going to Alaska, because if you don't go to see Alaska now, within a decade or so, there may not be as much Alaska to see." Is that just a bunch of hype, or is there a little bit of validity to that statement?
I'm not sure about Alaska specifically. It probably depends on where in Alaska you want to see and what you want to see.
Yeah.
But certainly there are serious impacts of climate change that we are seeing right now. I think coral reefs are a big example where at the degree of warming that we've gotten to, coral reefs are already extremely vulnerable. They're one of the first things that can get impacted by this level of warming. There's other things like the West Antarctic ice sheet and the Greenland ice sheet that are seeing some of the early warning signals that this level of temperature warming we've already had can have a great effect. But at the same time, I think as much as these things are big concerns, they're also not reason to just give up all hope. If we can mitigate this to prevent it from getting too much worse. If we can try to adapt to the changes that are coming into place, there's certainly room for a sustainable and healthy and prosperous future. We just have to put in that work to get there.
So let's bring it home, Ethan. Are there things that just we as individuals should be aware of and we can do in order to make the environment around us, around our homes and our local communities more, environmentally, effective?
There's an interesting debate in the environmental world as to what degree individuals have a responsibility or the ability to affect things. And I know some people say this is just due to X number of companies or X number of countries and individuals can't change that. But on the other hand, I do think there are opportunities, especially in the way individuals can affect community level change. So I like to give five things individuals can do. Number one is to find low-hanging fruit in your life. If there's anything you can do that helps the climate and is super easy, for example, for myself, I'm besides this jacket, I'm not a big fashion person, so I don't need to go buy the new fast fashion trend every single week. If that's something that's easy for you to do, if you can rewear your clothes, that certainly saves on emissions. But I'm someone who loves eating meat, so that's something that would be really hard for me to do, and I don't guilt myself for not being able to do that. If someone else can do that, that can help. Number two is to do your research. There's a lot of times where the trendy climate solution might not actually be the most effective. For example, it saves emissions if you have a reasonably fuel-efficient gasoline-powered car. If you drive it to the end of its life before buying an electric vehicle, that's a lot more effective than just junking your perfectly good car and getting the new electric vehicle. So things like that, you want to do your research to know what's best. Number three is to uplift others who do good things. I see a lot of vegan bashing in the U.S., and I love meat. I couldn't do a vegan diet, but I have the utmost respect for anyone who's able to do that. It does help. So I hope that's one example where people can kind of be more supportive when people make a more sustainable choice. Number four is to use your voice. For a lot of people, that may be activism or protesting or whatever, but that's not me. I love nuance way too much to put anything on a sign, and I hate crowds, but I found my voice via writing and podcasting and actually getting into that nuance. So whether it's that, whether it's implementing something in your home or your business or doing stuff on social media, or there's so many things you can do. And then number five, which is maybe the most controversial, but to me the most important, talk to someone you disagree with. And it doesn't have to be about climate. It can be about books or movies or sports, but just getting better at having those conversations is so important, because it really does help if we can try to get common ground on these issues and not be fighting each other and not just be so off. It's better if we're on the same page. And the only way to do that is if we just start having conversations with each other. We don't have to be friends, but as long as we can talk, then we can move the needle.
You are absolutely spot on, and I will add one thing to that, and that is when you have conversation, make it knowledgeable conversation and make it respectful conversation. Not like you're going in to fight the reasons not to do something. Try to find the common ground to do something. I've often said that if everybody puts their ideas down on the table and you start to discuss them and you go through them, pretty soon you can probably come up with the two or three best ideas and then put them into action. And that's called progress. And I think that's what we need to do. And I think that's maybe what some of the young people are doing. As far as podcasts, yeah. You know what, Ethan? I'm not opposed to seeing some of those young people out there with the placards and walking on the streets and in the parks and all, saying to save our parks and be more environmentally friendly, because I think that's another ingredient to it. And I'll tell you what I'm going to start doing. I also like my meat, but I think that we can also encourage people that if you're going to go out and order a sausage pizza, throw some mushrooms and green peppers and stuff like that on it too, because at least you could say you're doing something that's environmentally, you know, positive by adding the veggies.
100%. The thing I try to do, which is so small, but if I'm going to get beef, it's got to be good. Like a good burger or a good steak. Like I'm not going to get a really bad McDonald's burger or something. Again, it's a very small thing and it's not something I'm going to go brag about, but just one little mental thing. And again, doing those little things and patting yourself on the back actually is a good thing. It kind of keeps you engaged, keeps you informed about the issues. And if you share it and it comes up organically, then maybe someone will learn something.
So are you more of a fan of organically grown beef and vegetables rather than genetically grown?
That's actually an issue I would like to explore more. We did an episode on organic and fair trade certifications. And the thing that I like about it is when you have a free market, an important piece of that I learned in my intro economics class is that consumers need to have full information in order to make rational decisions. We don't anyway, but that's kind of Econ 101. And right. What organic and fair trade and all these other certifications serve to do is give a easy indicator to people as to what they're buying, give them a little more information about it and allow them to make that choice. Granted, all these certifications have to be held accountable and monitored, and some companies create their own bogus certification. So it's certainly not perfect, but that is one thing that made me kind of warm up to the idea of these certifications.
Is it, you know, positive for people to consider growing their own vegetables and stuff, plant a tree in the backyard, maybe a raised garden to raise some of their own fruits and veggies and herbs and all? Is that just something that's, you know, fine for them to do individually, or is that actually helping the environment and climate control?
Yeah, do what you want to do. I think that it, I don't know the degree to which it's going to solve every problem. But again, all these little things are good ways to start conversations, let people in your community know that you don't just care about this issue, but you're someone who's informed and you can have those conversations and you can maybe inspire people. And I think that's where doing some of these individual actions is really helpful in inspiring community level change and getting people around you to see what's going on.
Yeah. And like a lot of other things, it starts at home. And if you can do something that makes you feel better about the environment around you, then you're taking a positive step. If you can share that with your neighbors, you can share it with your community. A lot of communities are starting community-wide gardens to raise freshly organically grown produce. And then you almost every community of any size has farmer markets, like on the weekends, so you can go buy your fresh fruits and vegetables. And I don't know about you, but when I go out and buy fresh fruit that's just been picked a day or so before at a marketplace, there is a completely different flavor than what you buy in the supermarkets that's probably was picked a month ago, and they've tried to genetically or some way keep it fresh for you. It's a whole different flavor. And like you said about the beef, that the fresh, grown beef and all has better taste than that's just basically manufactured and packaged and then reprocessed.
Oh, 100%. And if we're talking about community gardens or even rooftop gardens, these are real solutions that can not just provide awesome fruit and improve the community, but they can improve air quality because you have all this plant life. They can actually sequester carbon. They can help with stormwater runoff. They can help with justice. Often it is low-income and minority communities that are having the least access to green space, which is a very important part of life to have access to. Often they have higher rates of asthma because of poor air quality and that lack of green space. It's also a great educational opportunity. I could go on, but there's real benefit to having these sorts of community green spaces and gardens and that sort of thing beyond the obvious.
Visit thesweatypenguin.com because there's a lot of that information, and you can reach out to Ethan to get even more information. You know, recently it was on the news, and I was absolutely blown away when they said that we recently experienced the hottest average day on record on the globe and all. What do you think of that? And how do you address a statistic like that?
And we did it 4 days in a row too. July 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th each broke the record. Yeah. I think that it is certainly very concerning, but I did try to communicate at the time that any headlines that were referring to it as like climate change run amok or out of control were slightly misleading. Climate change is the majority of what caused that extreme heat. But there's also a factor related to El Nino. So there's a natural phenomenon in the tropical Pacific Ocean called the El Nino Southern Oscillation, where basically there are trade winds in the Pacific Ocean that go from east to west. When those winds speed up, it pulls some of the warm surface water from the eastern Pacific into the western Pacific. That means cold water upwells, and that creates kind of a cooling effect for the planet, which is called La Nina. We were in a La Nina event from 2020 to 2022, I believe, and just kind of transitioned out this year. When those winds slow down, it means less of that warm water is moving into the Western Pacific, which means the overall surface of the Pacific is warmer, which means global temperatures get slightly warmer, and that's what we call El Nino. So back in around 2012, we were in a pretty extreme La Nina, and if you compared temperatures then to temperatures in 1998, when we were in a severe El Nino, temperatures were about the same. Climate change pulled it up, but the El Nino La Nina pulled it down. And so there were some climate deniers out there really pushing this idea of a global warming pause or global warming hiatus, which was just not accurate. It was a natural phenomenon offsetting climate change. Similarly, today, when we see El Nino spike things, we don't want to be disingenuous either. We want to acknowledge that El Nino is part of what's causing this, but climate change did cause the vast majority. So that was an important thing I tried to communicate. There's a lot of reason to be concerned about climate change just off the science. So I don't want to exaggerate things beyond what's already there.
And you're located in California. So, you know, the rest of the country knows that what happens on your coast eventually moves across the country. Whether it goes high or low, it ends up getting over to the East Coast and the Northwest part of the country. And you could pretty much follow that. And that is really part of the climate issue also, is that if the West Coast is going to get intense heat and no rain, then probably central part and the eastern part of the country is going to experience the same thing.
Sometimes I think it depends on how all the different weather systems are interacting, but I'm not a meteorologist. I study up when there's a specific event to see what climate impact there was, but it definitely depends on the situation.
Ethan, what does Earth Day mean to you?
That's a good question. So Earth Day, the very first Earth Day was in 1970, and it came
after, really.
Yeah, it's been around a while, but it came after Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring. It came after, I believe there was a lake or river in Ohio that caught fire due to chemical pollution. And it was also not long after the first moon landing when we saw the first picture of Earth from outer space, and we saw this small blue dot that we call home. And I think all of that sort of led, it was a very tumultuous decade, the 60s, with a lot of cultural conflict, but there was this togetherness that came from this realization of how important the environment was that did lead to the first Earth Day, but in addition led to the passage of a slate of bipartisan environmental legislation, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, the Endangered Species Act, the establishment of the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. These things all happened under Democratic Congresses and Republican presidents Nixon and Ford, and under bipartisan coalitions. So I think that that time when we were so culturally divided, but we could come together on the environment, is a big inspiration to me. And those laws I just mentioned are today still the bedrock of U.S. environmental protection. So I see that as a very hopeful story, and I hope that today we can maybe take some inspiration from that and realize that despite all our cultural differences, the environment is something that affects all of us, and we can create policy just as ambitious as we did back then.
Folks, I'm going to urge you to visit the website, because it's not only a lot of educational information, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun that you have put into the podcast and into the website. And all, it is very, very much worth visiting. It gives people the opportunity to not only see what is going on in a variety of areas within the country, but you know, the word solutions just popped up on the screen there. And I'm a firm believer that we as a society, we're either part of the problem or we're part of the solution. And the more that we learn about what's going on with respect to global warming and climate issues, the better educated we become, and the more able we are to make an influence on our local authorities and all, to make sure that these issues are addressed. It's where's Wally? I love that. Do you do any of the animation on the podcast and on the website, or is that part of your team?
We have an awesome team of around 20 of us, and we have people from the environment side to comedy to graphics to social media to journalism to sound and video editing. It's a really amazing group to work with, and I myself, my role is to manage the team, to write our Tip of the Iceberg episodes, which is our more newsy show. I'll break down a news topic and then answer a question from the audience. I do revisions on our deep dive episodes. I kind of review everybody else's work, and I reach out and invite guests, and I do media appearances like this one. But there's a real team effort that goes into this. A lot of our web content is from other members of our team who do a great job putting that together.
Yeah, and also, I would urge everybody that is watching and listening, this is not a website, and it's not a topic just for adults. That this is a website that you can share with your kids and get them involved in understanding and knowing what it's all about, so that maybe they will go on and want to go on to college and study this as their profession also. You know, Ethan, it's amazing to me that you have taken on something that you knew so little about as a child and maybe didn't care about as much, and you have become quite an authority on what this is and what it means to us as a society. And, you know, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with me on the show and sharing this with folks. What do you want to say to the people that are watching and listening about what they can do in order to make their life better with regard to climate change and the environment.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think a large part of why I've been a hopefully effective communicator on climate is because I was not an outdoorsy person growing up. I didn't initially find it interesting. So I had to find ways to make it interesting for myself before I could make it interesting for others. And I think because of that, I've developed a very people-centric approach, a very community-centric approach, a very solution-centric approach that tends to resonate with a large variety of people. In terms of what people can do, I mentioned my five individual solutions earlier, but again, just informing yourself, and that's where the Sweaty Penguin comes in. I think that we're kind of the perfect introduction to these issues because we try to make it less overwhelming, less politicized, and more fun. We start you at a intro level. We assume in every episode that this is the first episode that you're listening to, so you can jump in at any time and learn what's going on. So I'd encourage people to head to our website, to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you do that. We're on social media. I myself at EthanBrown5151, the podcast at Sweaty Penguin Pod on Instagram and TikTok, at Sweat Penguin Pod on Twitter. And if you really want to support the show, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/thesweatypenguin. There you can get merch, bonus content, a bunch of other cool stuff, and it really helps us out. We're still in that early growing stage where we don't always know where our funding is going to come from. So every little donation helps us a lot.
And don't keep the Sweaty Penguin all to yourself. Share it with your friends and family and neighbors, and especially the kids. Get them involved in the Sweaty Penguin and maybe sitting and listening to some of the podcasts, because I think they'll find it fascinating too. You know, Ethan, I end my shows with Oscar Wilde's quote, "Be yourself because everyone else is already taken." And I can say that you fit into that category very, very well. And all I thank you very, very much. That'll do it for another edition of Someone You Should Know. And go out and make it a great day. And again, a big thank you to Someone You Should Know, Ethan Brown. Thanks, Ethan.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Someone you should know.